ke noho ne ka aha ho o kolo kolo ho pii kue o ka luna kana vai hano hano o Lisa M. Ginoza, a me ka luna kana vai hano hano o Keith K. Hiraoka, a me ka luna kana vai hano hano o Clyde J. Wadsworth e ho o malune. The Intermediate Court of Appeals is now in session. The Honorable Lisa M. Ginoza, Keith K. Hiraoka, and Clyde Jade Wadsworth presiding. Case number CAAP-21-517, consolidated with CAAP-21-513, Edmund Crafchow et al. Versus Dongbu Insurance Company LTD et al., Wesley Ching arguing, and Jennifer Clark also appearing for appellant, Peter Martin arguing, and Thomas Zizi also appearing for appellee. Argument on the merits.
Good morning, everyone. May I have appearances of the council, please?
Good morning, Peter Martin on behalf of plaintiffs appellees, Edmund Crafchow and Kathleen Crafchow, and also making an appearance today is Tom Zizi, also counsel for plaintiffs appellees.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Morning, Your Honor. Wesley Ching and Jennifer Clark appearing for Dongbu Insurance Company, now known as DB Insurance Company, and John Mullen.
Good morning.
Plaintiff, defendant appellant.
All right. Thank you very much. Well, first, what I'd like to do is thank everyone, counsel certainly included, in accommodating the change to a remote proceeding today. Really appreciate everyone's effort in doing that. And I also want to thank our court staff in making that change on fairly short notice. So thank you, everyone. Counsel, are you ready to proceed with argument?
Yes.
Okay, Mr. Ching? Before you start, Mr. Ching, I apologize. I should have confirmed. I understand you want 10 minutes for rebuttal. Correct?
Yes.
Okay, please proceed.
Chief Judge Ginoza, Justice Hiraoka, Justice Wadsworth, may it please the court, I am Wesley Ching, appearing for Dongbu Insurance Company, formerly now known as DB Insurance Company, and I'll refer to them as DB Insurance Company, and John Mullen. And I do want to extend my thanks and appreciation for the court extending oral argument for this, what we believe to be, at least for Hawaii appellate courts, a matter of first impression, namely the scope of an appraisal panel pursuant to a first-party insurance policy like the policies at issue, which were issued by DB to the Crafchows, namely a homeowner's policy and two dwelling policies for the villa, the larger residence, and the cottage and the garage. Those each had separate policies. And those policies, by the way, I will always refer to docket 10, which is the record on appeal, and the individual docket numbers. And the policies are at dockets 192, 194, and 196, and they all contain the same appraisal clause that's at issue. So we are asking the court to, as far as our points of error with the Second Circuit, that the Circuit Court erred in denying DB's motion to vacate because the two of the panel members, the umpire and another appraiser, exceeded their authority by determining and addressing coverage issues. And secondly, that the motion to vacate by the Second Circuit Court was improperly denied, where the finding of the Circuit Court was that the appraiser panel, namely umpire McConnell and appraiser Arnold, in issuing their appraisal awards, had to take into consideration arguments pertaining to the scope of coverage and exclusions. And that, of course, is a coverage evaluation or assessment So the issues are related. The first issue being, does the appraisal panel being conducted pursuant to an ISO insurance services organization policy, which universally provides first party and other kinds of policies nationwide, whether that appraisal clause in the policies permits the appraisal panel to consider coverage. And the answer universally around the country, and in fact in the U.S. District Court of Hawaii, is no. They are not authorized to consider coverage issues. What they are authorized to do is to address and determine a factual issue, the amount of the loss. And if you look at...
Mr. Ching, if I could just cut in here and ask you, though, you did in the motion to vacate request as an alternative remedy, as I understand, a stay for enforcement of the appraisal awards until the coverage issues could be determined. Is that correct?
Yes.
A request to stay, right?
Yeah, we did.
Pending resolution of coverage issues. So first question, just make sure that I understand the record correctly. Was there any kind of a deck action or anything like that filed with regards to coverage?
Well, there is in this respect. This actual proceeding is from the Second Circuit Court lawsuit filed by the Crafchows, and that's civil number 19-1-0266. And in DB's answer to complaint filed filed November 25th, 2019, over 3 years ago, and that's docket 79 of the record on appeal. There were several defenses raised to the breach of contract action and other claims filed by the Crafchows. And in the third defense, the defense was asserted this action is barred by the terms and conditions of the subject policies. The fifth defense, coverage under the subject policies, is barred in whole or in part by the terms, exclusions, conditions, and limitations contained or incorporated in such policy, including any and all endorsements. And seventh defense, plaintiff's claims for damages are barred to the extent plaintiff's claims are for losses or damages that were not covered or excluded under the policy. So this is a little different from a special proceeding filed to confirm an appraisal award. This was in the context of the Second Circuit action and the motion to compel appraisal in front of, at the time, Judge Cahill, was in the context of that Second Circuit action. So there's actually at issue in the Second Circuit action, which of course, the only thing that's taken place in the Second Circuit action has essentially been the appraisal and the motions to confirm and vacate, and then this appeal while the appraisal was pending.
To get context of the Second Circuit action, it's an action that was initiated by the Crafchows that asserted, among other things, like a breach of contract claim and some other causes of action. And within that was the motion seeking compelling of the appraisal, correct?
Exactly.
Okay.
In fact, just for the record, that's docket one of docket 10. It was the first item filed on August 15, 2019. And looking at the first claim for relief is breach of contract. There are other claims being made in the complaint, but that's the operative complaint. And the reason this is on appeal is because of the provision in Chapter 658A that allows for appeals of this nature.
So let's go back to your request for a stay until coverage issues can be determined. What specifically happened with regards to your request for that stay?
It was denied by Judge Kawano.
Was that discussed at the hearing was, did he specifically address that?
I don't recall that he addressed it. He did issue a verbal decision, and probably the closest to capturing that decision was the order denying motion to vacate, which is docket 238 of docket 10, in which he addressed, it's almost a page long, but it talks about arbitrations, traditional arbitrations, and citing to cases, Mars Construction, UPHA versus University of Hawaii, and Tatabue. Right. These are all traditional arbitration cases and totally different from appraisals, as I'd like to elaborate on.
So just one final question on this. What is your current position then with regards to the request for the state to resolve coverage issues?
Well, I think that goes to what we're seeking, which is to vacate the decision of the Second Circuit Court denying the motion to vacate, and then instructing the court that the appraisal panel to be reconvened shall not consider coverage issues, and that those coverage issues would be addressed in the Second Circuit action in front of now Judge Kawano. Okay. So I think my point is there is already at issue the coverage issues that in the Second Circuit action, and that makes this a little different from a pure appraisal, special proceeding, motion to confirm. And the problem, of course, is that the Second Circuit issued judgments on these confirmations. And of course, arguably that forecloses the issues of coverage that the appraisal panel admittedly made decisions on and which were recognized and acknowledged by Judge Kawano in his written decision.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Ching.
Mr. Ching, I believe you were getting into this, but do you agree that none of the policies, none of the applicable policies here expressly define the word loss?
I don't think there's a definition of amount of loss, if that's what you're getting at. The words amount of loss are used three times in each of these appraisal provisions. But I don't recall there being a definition of loss in the policies at issue.
So how are you proposing that we glean the meaning of the word loss? Are we supposed to glean it from the context of the policies? What are the sources that we should look at to understand what the meaning of loss is in these policies? And the amount of loss?
Many of the courts have referred to it as the either the cost of repair or, but it's a factual finding of the amount of the loss sustained for the property or business interruption, depending on the issue. But it's not a legal finding or a coverage finding. The amount of loss is a factual finding, and that's replete in the cases that we have cited from California, Wisconsin, and other states, and including the Wailua case, Judge K for the Wailua case back in 1995 and 1998.
Would you agree that this case really turns on that phrase and what it means, the amount of loss?
Well, I think the that is the words amount of loss creates the scope of authority for the appraisal panel. And actually, if you were to look at, and if I could refer to the Wailua Associates, the in the 95 decision by Judge Kaye, he specifically refers to, in fact, says, clearly the appraisal panel should not consider issues pertaining to coverage and liability under the insurance policy, as these issues are beyond the scope of the party's agreement to arbitrate. That's Wailua Associates versus Aetna, 904F sub 1142 at 1149, District of Hawaii, 1995. And then it's followed 3 years later, he issues another decision because the appraisal panel has issued an award. And the insured is then trying to argue that the Aetna is precluded from addressing coverage by virtue of the award of the amount of loss. And Judge Kaye held in the at Wailua Associates, they call it Wailua 3, but it's 27 F sub 2nd 1211, 1998 decision, that the insured was seeking partial summary judgment on all of the values and basically arguing that the Aetna was foreclosed from arguing coverage issues. And Judge Kaye held that the awards did not bar issues of coverage and mitigation, which were not submitted for resolution. So the I think that's a good example of a before and after. There was before the appraisal award, Judge Kaye issued that first decision, the 1995 decision, that coverage was outside the scope of the authority of the appraisal panel. And he basically reaffirmed it when the insurer tried to get summary judgment and bar the insurer, Aetna, from arguing coverage with respect to the award that had been issued.
Thank you.
Mr. King, in this case, how do we know that the Crafchow's appraiser and the umpire considered coverage issues in making their appraisal award?
We included correspondence in the record on appeal at docket 3637, 181, 183, 184, 185, 186, 187. But one of those is at 3637, where umpire McConnell in an April 8th, 2021 email to Mr. Reinhardt and Mr. Arnold, the two party appointed appraisers, said in part, "It seems to me that a resolution of the problem requires a determination of the facts surrounding the alleged violations and legal research into the applicable insurance law."
Well, those were all communications that took place before the appraisal awards were made.
Yes.
Now, if you look at the appraisal awards themselves, I don't see any indication on either of the two pages of the awards that coverage issues were taken into consideration by Arnold or Judge McConnell.
Yeah, there's a third page in the record on appeal, and it's actually Exhibit A to our opening brief. There's a third page on at least two of the appraisal awards that's part of the record, and it's a note by Judge McConnell. And he basically is addressing Mr. Reinhardt's reservations about the award. And
I wanted to ask you about that, because the way that I read that note by Judge McConnell, Mr. Reinhardt was objecting because the award included amounts that were not covered by the policies. But doesn't that indicate that our Crafchow's appraiser and Judge McConnell did not take into consideration coverage issues?
No, that indicates that, in my mind, that Judge McConnell and Mr. Arnold found that there was coverage for all of the items awarded in the appraisal awards. But I agree, that's the key language that I was going to refer to that you just indicated was the ward includes amounts that are not covered by the applicable policy. And that would indicate to me that the two members of the panel found that they were covered and that no exclusions applied, because that's exactly what Judge Kawano said in his order. That as to his finding in his order, this is the written order, July 26, 2021, docket 238, the appraiser and umpire's resulting appraisal values were submitted, argued, and considered, including consideration pertaining to scope of coverage and exclusions. So the judge reviewing the appraisal awards concluded that the appraiser and umpire had considered the scope of coverage and exclusions in issuing their award. And that, in our, we submit is error for the Second Circuit to deny our motion to vacate, because it's clear that the appraisers exceeded their scope of authority under the appraisal provisions in the three DB policies.
Mr. Ching, did DB or its agent advance funds to the Kraftchows under a reservation of rights pending preparation of final settlement figures?
Yes.
And if so, what's the significance of that?
Well, I think the answer is yes. They advanced, I don't have the figures in front of me, but several hundred thousand dollars on the premise that those were undisputed amounts on a first party claim for property damage. Because if DB or its adjuster, John Mullen, had determined that those amounts were the proper cost of repair or amount of loss, then it would become, in effect, undisputed, and those funds were advanced. The awards do not identify the advanced amounts.
Mr. King, your red light has come on.
Oh.
That's hard to see, but
I didn't see it. I'm sorry.
Okay, so you have 10 minutes for rebuttal.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Martin.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the court. I would like to put forth three reasons why this court should affirm. The first one being, in this appeal, DB, the insurer, has not challenged the appraisal order itself. There's no point of error alleging that there's any, that the circuit court committed any error when it compelled an appraisal. There's also not a point of error alleging that the circuit court made a mistake when it issued an appraisal order that on its face is without restriction or limitation. Under the rules, where a point of error is not presented, it must be disregarded.
Mr. Martin,
yes.
Sorry, may I stop you right there, since I think you also made this point in your brief that the order compelling arbitration is unrestricted. And I assume that's because the language of the order states simply, it is hereby ordered, adjudged, and decreed that plaintiff's motion to compel arbitration is granted. And from that, you infer that there's no restriction. Is that right?
Yes, I think you have to look at the context to
get and that's actually what I want to ask you about, because I'm wondering whether it's fair to say that an order granting your motion to compel arbitration doesn't restrict the scope of the arbitration when the order was based at least on your statement in the motion papers that, quote, the appraisal of the claim only establishes the value of the loss and does not go to coverage. Insurance coverage is outside of the scope of an appraisal. unquote. So I'm not understanding how you can say there's no restriction when the order granting your motion is based on the representations you made to the court in the motion.
Well, thank you for the question. The way I would answer that is if you look at what DB argued in their motion, their opposition to the motion to compel appraisal, they argued that the appraisal could not go forward because it was premature, because additional information was still needed on loss and coverage issues. They lost that argument, and they're not appealing it in this appeal. The appraisal went forward, and I think therefore you have to say it is established that the appraisal process in this case is both timely and appropriate. But asked for restrictions within that appraisal order, and they did not.
But you put a restriction on it, didn't you? In your papers when you said that it would, and this is what you're moving for, when you say the appraisal of the claim only establishes the value of the loss, it does not go to coverage. I mean, you're putting that restriction on it, aren't you?
The case law, as opposing counsel stated, has often said coverage is outside the consideration of an appraisal panel. That is true. Here, it's different. We have arguments about coverage, and I would argue that those arguments were found to be baseless. They have no basis in the actual language of the policies themselves. If an insurer could defeat an appraisal by merely alleging a coverage issue, that would give them a veto over the entire process. An insurer could defeat an appraisal by merely alleging a coverage issue, no matter how insubstantial or unsupported by the actual language of the policies. And I would argue in this case that the coverage issue, that being, does an alleged violation of Maui's short-term rental ordinance preclude coverage? The appraisal panel concluded that had no basis in the policies themselves, and that's not a coverage determination.
How is
the argument as baseless?
How is that not a coverage determination? You're telling me that the appraisers determined that there was no language in the policy that would preclude coverage. How is that not a coverage determination?
I would argue that the scope of an appraisal panel's authority is to simply set the amount of loss for the items that are considered. And where there's coverage for an item, then that's what the appraisal panel does. If you look at some of the cases from outside the jurisdiction, they actually support the argument that when an appraisal panel fails to set the amount of loss for covered items, that is outside its authority. So if you look at the Wisconsin appellate opinion, St. Croix Trading Company, there the court found that the appraisal panel was outside its authority because it refused to set the amount of loss for certain items. It only set the amount of loss for 3 of the 7 items there. And the court held that was making a coverage determination. The appraisal panel must simply set the amount of loss where there is coverage. And if you look at other cases, including Wailua versus Aetna, the case from the U.S. District Court of the District of Hawaii, where it is undisputed there is coverage, there is no genuine coverage issue. And I can go through the Aetna case in detail to show why it's saying that, which I will do now.
Isn't there a dispute here, though, about coverage? You said when there's no dispute about coverage. I thought there is a dispute about coverage. At least in some respects.
All the 3 policies in question have coverage for lost rental income. That was never in dispute before the appraisal panel. What the issue before the appraisal panel was whether an alleged violation of a short-term Maui short-term rental ordinance would limit that undisputed coverage. But there is coverage for lost rental income. No one during the appraisal process said otherwise. And that's the big question before us.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Martin, just real simply, is it your view that the appraisal panel did make determinations on coverage or not?
My view is that they, as Judge Kawano noted, arguments about coverage were submitted, argued, and proceeded upon by the appraisal panel. But those arguments were found to be baseless by the appraisal panel. There was no
arguments on coverage.
Yeah, arguments on coverage. They looked at the policies and they couldn't find any language that would support those limiting based on those arguments.
So again, very simply, that what I understand what you're arguing is, yes, they did consider and make determinations on coverage. Is that your position? I'm just trying to.
No. I'm saying they dismissed arguments that Reinhardt and DB brought up during the appraisal process. They dismissed those arguments about coverage because it had no basis. I'm not saying that the appraisal panel said, we're going to make a coverage determination here. There's nothing in the appraisal award that acknowledges or says we're making a coverage determination today. No, they're simply setting the amount of loss for the items under their consideration, you know?
So let me just follow up then. Mr. Ching argued earlier that in the answer to the Kraftchild's complaint, there are defenses based on coverage. And he specified those parts of the answer. Given the appraisal awards, is coverage then still to be determined? What, in other words, what ultimately would be paid to your client based on coverage, is that still to be determined in this case?
I think what's to be determined is whether the appraisal award, as it was issued and confirmed by the circuit court, is good and stands, and that's and whether that's a needs to be enforced under Hawaii's Arbitration Act.
But if you're saying all it did was to set the amount of loss, do you disagree that coverage still needs to be determined? I mean, a policy provides for coverage of certain things, and if you're saying coverage was not determined by the appraisal panel, and there are coverage defenses in the answer, is coverage still to be determined in terms of what would ultimately be paid to your clients?
I would say no. And I would also like to point out that, you know, DB in its motion to vacate asked to vacate the appraisal award, one, and then the alternative, they asked for a stay for declaratory relief, but they're not appealing that. The court denied both those requests, and they're not appealing the second request. They're not appealing the request that for declaratory relief. And since they're not appealing that, that argument must be waived in this appeal.
Mr. Martin, didn't the circuit court stay further proceedings in the circuit court case pending this appeal?
Well, yes, pending this appeal.
So if that's the case, what further proceedings would have been necessary to be stayed?
Well, the plaintiffs brought a number of actions against DB and Mullen, including breach of contract claims. Those have been stayed. I think that's what the court was referring to. There's a number of other actions that are still pending outside of this appraisal.
Well, and didn't Dongbu's answer to your client's complaint allege affirmative defenses consisting of coverage defenses, policy defenses, and exclusions?
Yes, so that would be a question that the circuit court would have to analyze after this court's determination on whether it's going to uphold the appraisal award, whether those still exist or not.
But if we were to uphold the appraisal award, since all of the appraisal rewards purport to give Dongbu a deadline for payment to the Kraftchows, wouldn't those issues be mooted in the circuit court?
Well, the way I see it is that if the appraisal award is affirmed, a lot of arguments that DB may have had will be mooted. They will no longer exist. DB never filed a declaratory action in this case asking for the court's guidance on the scope of coverage. And if you've looked at a lot of the cases that have been discussed.
Why would DB have to file a separate declaratory relief action if its answer to your client's complaint alleged as affirmative defenses, exclusions, policy defenses, and coverage defenses?
So the way I see it, the appraisal process is separate from all the other claims that are still pending. If the appraisal award is affirmed, that's gonna have a consequence on some of the affirmative defenses. It just that's the way I see it. Because
right,
Hawaii's arbitration,
I understand your position, Mr. Martin. I understand how you see it, but doesn't that go back to Dongbu's initial request to stay the appraisal until the scope of coverage is confirmed? Because if the appraisers appraised the amount of loss, that wouldn't necessarily tell anybody how much Dongbu owed, because there was a further issue about what aspects of that loss, if any, are covered or not covered or excluded or subject to policy or maybe subject to policy defenses.
I agree.
So isn't that a cart and horse argument?
Well, the way I see it, if DB could have appealed the circuit court's denial of its request for a stay, it was an alternative basis in the motion to vacate. They did not. I don't understand why they did not, but
well,
it's not before the court.
Maybe it's because your clients never asked for entry of judgment based on the order confirming the award, because there's nothing to stay. Your client couldn't have executed against Dongbu's assets based on an order confirming an award. Under the 658A, your clients would have needed to reduce the order to a judgment before proceeding to garnish Dongbu's assets, for example. So I don't think there was anything to stay based on the procedural status of the case at the time the notice of appeal was filed.
I see your point. You're saying you would need a final judgment, and that's going to be later in the case. I understand that.
I'm sorry if I cut you off. Please proceed.
Yes. So I would like to put forth three reasons why this court should affirm. I'll focus on the one that I think is a lot of these questions have keep on referring back to, and that is this. A number of case law holds that where it's undisputed there is coverage, there is no genuine scope of coverage issue. For instance, in Wailua versus Aetna, the U.S. District Court of the District of Hawaii found there was no general scope of coverage issue. In that case, Aetna, the insurer, had argued that there were issues regarding the existence and extent of coverage, including whether it was liable for the increased cost of repair for flood regulations. The court disagreed for two reasons. Under the policy, it was undisputed there was coverage. And two, under Hawaii's Arbitration Act, the scope of arbitrable issues must be broadly construed. Therefore, the court concluded...
Mr. Barton, sort of along the lines that you're arguing here, is there any provision in the applicable policies here that gives the appraiser the right to determine coverage issues?
I would say that the agreement to arbitrate is just the appraisal clause itself.
Where does it give the appraiser the right to determine coverage issues?
I would say that the scope of the agreement to arbitrate is for the appraisal panel to set the amount of loss for items that are under its consideration. Where it's undisputed, there is coverage. And I would say that under the three policies in this case, it's undisputed that there was coverage for lost rental income.
Okay. I just said that. So that's the sole source of your argument that the appraiser had the authority to consider coverage issues. There aren't other aspects of it.
And I would also say they have authority from the appraisal order. If you look at some cases, there's expressed limitations in the appraisal order itself. For instance, in Wailua, as explained in a later case by the U.S. District Court, the appraisal order itself expressly prohibited the appraisal panel from considering coverage. That's not the case here. That's why I argue that.
That sort of goes back to the point that we were making earlier about the fact that as part of your motion, you said that the appraiser wasn't going to be determining coverage issues, right?
Well, again, I would make a distinction between arguments about coverage and coverage issues. You know, some arguments are good. Some arguments have no basis. Anyone can make an argument that there's a coverage issue. When does that short circuit the appraisal process where the appraisers can no longer set the amount of loss?
Thank you.
For clarification, Mr. Martin, you're referring to Judge Cahill's order granting the motion to compel our appraisal, but nothing in that order says anything about addressing coverage, does it? I mean, it was addressed in the argument. That's what we were talking about just now, and you're referencing with Judge Wadsworth, but the order itself does not reference coverage as far as I can tell.
That's true. It doesn't reference coverage, but after the arguments were made, Judge Cahill issued that order over the opposition of DB, who argued that an appraisal could not go forward, that it was premature, that additional information was needed on loss and coverage issues. Judge Cahill said, no, I don't think that the appraisal will go forward. It's timely and appropriate. Judge Cahill could have said, okay, I'll grant part of that. I'll let the appraisal go forward, but I'm going to put a restriction in there that on certain items, additional information is still needed. Judge Cahill didn't do that. He said the appraisal will go forward.
Would Judge Cahill have, did he even address what the terms of the policy was in terms of coverage? I mean, I guess that's part of what is confusing here, because I think what I'm hearing you say is the appraisal panel addressed coverage arguments and, you know, rejected certain things, and there was no dispute as to coverage. I think that's what I'm hearing you say. Please correct me if I'm incorrect on that. And that all the appraisal panel did was to set the amount of loss. Is any of that?
That's one of my key arguments, that all the appraisal panel did was set the amount of loss for items where it was undisputed there was coverage. If you look at the policies, the three policies, every single one of them provide coverage for lost rental income. And during the appraisal process, no one questioned that. The issue was there's an alleged violation of the short-term rental ordinance. Does that change the undisputed coverage? The appraisal panel said, we're looking at these agreements. We're finding no language in them that says that would limit the lost rental income.
The argument
has no basis in the policies.
So they made in your view, they did make a determination as to what that language in the policy meant in terms of whether lost rental income from vacation rentals that may not have complied with county regulations should have been included in the amount of loss. They made that, the appraisal panel made that determination that you could include those as part of the lost rental.
They concluded that the argument was without basis, which is true. They made that conclusion. And I would say, I would point back to the Wailua case where the court says, where there's an ambiguity, the appraisal panel has broad authority to interpret the policy. That's the U.S. District Court of the District of Hawaii interpreting Hawaii's Arbitration Act.
I understand your argument. I mean, I just want kind of clarity on where your lines are. Thank you.
Well, going back to the argument, the first reason I would say this court should affirm is because DB is not challenging the appraisal order itself. Many of their arguments go back to the same arguments they made before the circuit court, that the circuit court made mistakes in issuing the appraisal order. But there's no point of error saying that there's anything wrong with the appraisal going forward when it did, or that the appraisal order not having the restrictions that they wanted. So I would argue that those points should be disregarded in this appeal because they're not points of error. The second reason I think this court should affirm is because it's clear that the appraisal panel could consider at least arguments about coverage from the appraisal order, which does not contain those restrictions that I've been talking about. The third reason I would say this court should affirm is because there isn't a genuine coverage issue here. Where case law has held that where it is undisputed there is coverage, there is no genuine scope of coverage issue. This is not only explained by Wailua, but it's also explained by the Rhode Island Supreme Court in Hahn versus Allstate and a Texas appellate court in Johnson v. State Farm. And finally, in conclusion, since I'm running low on time here, I would like to also point out that there's a public policy.
Mr. Martin, before you conclude, yes. I have a question.
Okay.
The affirmative defenses in Dongbu's answer don't limit the coverage issue to the lost rental income claim, does it? Isn't there also an issue about whether the Crafchows misrepresented that the villa was their primary residence and that it was actually a business use being put to the property? I mean, those are also coverage issues, aren't they?
Yeah. Yes. And DB says there's a lot of coverage issues that were presented before the appraisal panel. The appraisal panel considered all of appraiser Reinhardt's concerns and concluded that the principal one was whether an alleged violation of the short-term rental ordinance limited the loss. That determination by the appraisal panel should be deferred to. It's not the role of a court to second guess every step of the of a arbitration process under the Hawaii's Arbitration Act. They considered all the concerns and concluded that there is only one principal one. And I would also note that some of these other coverage issues, in particular the one about Bailey Hill, is based on a bad case law. DB cites to Allstate versus Sylvester. That case has been criticized by a later decision, Burlington versus Panacorp, where they said it does not stand for the proposition that DB wants it to stand for. But I would say even more importantly, the appraisal panel, with the information before it, not with the information that DB is trying to argue in his appeal, but the information before the appraisal panel, they made the conclusion that these other issues weren't that significant, that the only issue was one.
I have a really important question, and I know that your yellow light is on, but I'll indulge you because I'm asking the question. Okay. Are you familiar with a case called National Union Fire Insurance Company against Reynolds?
I have looked at that case before, but it's not fresh in my memory.
Okay, that case was an underinsured motorist claim. So it was an auto policy, not a homeowner's policy. But in that case, the way I read the holding is an arbitration clause that required the arbitrator to determine the claimant's damages resulting from the accident with the underinsured tortfeasor did not include the arbitrator determining any coverage issues. So how is that case distinguishable other than being auto versus homeowners?
I would like to have the chance to further brief that if the court feels that it's a material question, and I feel like I could distinguish it. I just don't feel fresh, my memory's not fresh enough about the specifics of the case to distinguish it right here. But if the court wants further briefing, I will actually make a request right now that we'll be allowed to file further briefing in this matter on some of the issues that were raised by your honors.
I think everybody can read the Reynolds decision because it's a pretty clear decision. It says what it says. But I just wanted to know if you're familiar with it because it wasn't raised or it wasn't cited by anybody in the case so far. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you for your question. In conclusion, I would like to point out a public policy concern. This court's decision will have an impact on the way appraisals are conducted in the future in the state. Therefore, I believe that it's tantamount that this court issue an opinion that affirms the importance of the appraisal process and more generally affirms the importance of Hawaii's Arbitration Act. And I would point to a case by the Rhode Island Supreme Court, Hahn versus Allstate, which explains that the public policy of the appraisal process is to provide for the speedy and efficient resolution of claims without litigation. The court went on to hold that to allow an insurer to circumvent the appraisal process puts the policyholder in a very difficult position of either having to accept expensive litigation or possibly a lowball settlement offer. The Rhode Island Supreme Court stated that's an unacceptable choice to put a policyholder in. So the appraisal process is designed to allow parties like the Crafchows to resolve their resolve claims in an efficient manner without the need of expensive litigation. And I think that appraisal process should be respected.
All right, thank you, Mr. Martin.
Is that my red light on now, or?
That's your yellow light. You still have some time if you'd like.
Oh, okay.
It's up to you.
Were you going to ask another question?
I was going to ask a question, but I was going to say that, after we conclude today, I think the court can also consider the request that you made on further supplemental briefing. And if we choose to decide that would be helpful, we'll issue an order in that regard. Okay.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Give us an opportunity to think about that. Any further argument, Mr. Martin?
How many minutes do I have left? Two? One?
I don't have my clock. All I know. Well, there you go. Your red light just went on.
Okay, that answered my question. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Martin. Okay, Mr. Ching.
Justices, I agree that this court needs to provide guidance to the public and the insurance community and the policyholder community as to the scope of an appraisal pursuant to a first-party appraisal provision in numerous first-party policies, homeowners policies, business property policies. But it also needs to provide guidance as to the limits of the appraisal panel. And going to the first point that was being made, the order by Judge Cahill, first of all, the reply in the motion to compel appraisal by the Crafchows said that the appraisal process would not go to coverage. And secondly, the court does not have the authority to expand on the party's agreement contained in the insurance policy setting forth the appraisal provision. The appraisal panel doesn't have the authority to expand its own jurisdiction, but the court also can only enforce the meeting of the agreement of the parties concerning the appraisal process. Secondly, we heard repeatedly by counsel for the Crafchilds that the arguments on coverage were baseless. But first, there are multiple issues that were being raised, another of which was that Bali High Farms, an LLC, was the owner of much of the personal property that was being claimed to have been damaged by the way, I forgot to mention this, there was a nearby wildfire that created, the fire didn't get to the Crafchild's property, but there was dust and smoke from the fire that caused the problems for the Crafchild's three buildings. But the definition in all these policies was the Crafchild's. And Bali High was not an additional insured. It was not covered by some definition of who is an insured. They were a separate entity, and they were filing tax returns for the business income loss. For the business revenue that they were obtaining. There's a huge issue about and genuine issues of coverage. And the other part of it is,
Mr. Ching, I have a question.
Oh, sorry.
Okay, so I understand you're talking about there's a variety of coverage issues that Donggu asserts, at least as you're arguing. My question, and I think what Mr. Martin is arguing, is that essentially Donggu has waived the ability to challenge that in this appeal because it's not appealing the denial of the request to stay that was an alternative ground in your motion to vacate the appraisal award. What is your position on that? Have you waived that argument?
No, we've reserved those defenses in our answer to the complaint on the coverage issues. And basically what's being, if the court were to affirm the Second Circuit's order denying DB's motion to vacate, DB will have lost any opportunity to raise these coverage issues in a court of law. And that's the appropriate forum. And there's no adequate record in the appraisal process on the coverage issues that would be raised in a court of law, such as the Second Circuit. So that's the huge issue that fundamentally causes prejudice to DB here, that unless this court vacates the circuit court's motion denying order denying the motion to vacate, DB will be left without any opportunity to address in a court of law the coverage issues that are genuine and paramount in some of the items of the appraisal award. And I take you back to the cases involving Wailua Associates because the third decision by Judge Kay on Wailua Associates, it was the same issue. The appraisal award was issued, and Wailua, the insured, was trying to basically argue that coverage issues are basically no longer applicable. And Judge Kay said the award did not bar issues of coverage and mitigation. And that's what the appellees want here is they want to bypass any dispute on the coverage issues by basically saying there were no genuine issues of coverage when there were. And certainly the record was not adequate in terms of the appraisal panel. And they're not, that's not their kuleana, that's not their jurisdiction to address coverage issues. And they weren't set up to do so.
The appraisal award set out specific numbers for the three different properties. So, you know, those are amounts of loss, it seems to me at least. The part of the awards, though, that are of interest is also, though, that it set a deadline. I think Judge Hirooka referenced to it. So it sets a deadline as to when Donggu has to pay those amounts. So that's where I think the question comes in as to whether Donggu has challenged the opportunity to have coverage resolved, and in what manner it has preserved that argument. So that's why I asked you whether you, you know, whether that has been waived or not.
Well, we don't think it's been waived. And we've, from the get-go, in our answer to complaint for DB, raised those coverage defenses. And there has never been an opportunity presented, certainly not in the appraisal process or post-appraisal, to address those genuine coverage issues. And by the way, the Hahn case that was cited, Hahn versus Allstate, 15 Atlantic 3rd, 1026, the coverage was undisputed there. There was no dispute by the carrier as to coverage. And here, there is very much a genuine dispute about coverage, which has never been litigated in a court of law. And that's the prejudice to DB if the court were to affirm the Second Circuit order. And we think that fundamentally, there's no dispute by the parties that the appraisal panel did not have the authority to address coverage issues. The record, at least what's in the record on appeal, and particularly the Second Circuit's own order, and that's docket 238 of docket 10, where the court said the appraiser and umpire's resulting appraisal values were submitted, argued, and considered, including consideration pertaining to scope of coverage and exclusions, makes it clear and undisputed that coverage issues were improperly considered, addressed, and decided by the appraisal panel without the authority to do so. And the appellees have cited no cases that explain their position that this record, although incomplete, does not provide genuine issues of coverage being raised at various times, including at the outset with the DB answer to complaint in this ongoing Second Circuit action. So in conclusion, judges, we would ask that the court vacate the three appraisal awards we would ask that the this court order that the circuit court, Second Circuit, vacate the three appraisal awards and issue an appropriate order instructing that the appraisal panel shall not consider or decide coverage issues in determining the amount of losses for the villa, cottage, and garage, and that all coverage issues are to be decided by the Second Circuit Court. Unless there are any other questions, I would submit on our briefs and argument.
I have a practical question. If the appraisal awards are vacated and the case goes back down and the court, the circuit court, orders the appraisers to determine the amount of loss without respect to coverage, and the appraisers come back with an undifferentiated award or an undifferentiated appraisal of X amount of dollars. Factually, I mean, that becomes, the law of the case with respect to the amount of damages or the amount of loss. But how do you differentiate between covered loss and uncovered loss, or loss that's excluded, or loss to which a policy defense applies? And take that out of the lump sum appraisal. Isn't it backwards?
There's several ways of doing it, but it is certainly a legitimate logistical question, because the Lee Court in Lee versus California Capital Insurance Company, 237 Cal App 4th, 1154, tried to address how the appraisal panel would address these issues by setting forth items where there were coverage issues as to the amount of loss, but leaving the coverage or exclusions of those issues to the court to decide. So it would require that the appraisal panel identify those items of loss where there are issues of coverage and those where they're not. And there are several items of loss as indicated by the advance payments made by DB to the Crafchows that would not be subject to issues of coverage. That would be one way of going about it. And I think the Lee Court tried to address that in its decision, that 2015 decision.
Thank you.
Okay, counsel, thank you very much for both of your arguments, and the court will take the matter under advisement.
Thank you, Justice.
All right. This will conclude our argument today. Thank you very much.
Well, ho'oku'u, ia mai ne ka'aha. Court is now adjourned.